So I'll start off by chanting the four vowels. Anyone that knows it is welcome to join in.
Shigur Segan Mo On Shujo
Last time I spoke, which is about 2 weeks, sorry, 2 months ago, I spoke about the Bodhisattva vows, which we just chanted. And what I wanted to speak about this time was more broadly about morality and ethics from a Zen point of view, but in particular, looking at what we call the precepts. And the precepts are what anyone who's wearing a robe or a rakasu will have taken the precepts, and the precepts are making certain commitments to life and to oneself. But they are quite specific, but on the other hand, they are very universal. And it's important to understand the attitude behind them, which is why I would like to speak about a Zen perspective on ethics, on morality, rather than necessarily specifically the precepts today. So effectively, what I want to speak about is the spirit of the precepts, which is where we get the sense of what Zen ethics and morality is. And what I'm using is a text called the Bonmo Kaigyo, a sutra which speaks about one's attitude to the precepts. And I'm using some quotes from that in what I say today. The first thing to understand about the precepts is that they are primarily not rigid rules. They're not about kind of being proscriptive about exactly what one does and what one doesn't, which is slightly different from some other schools of Buddhism. And the Bonmo Kaigyo says that if we imprison the precept in one aspect, then it produces a mind of error. So if we decide exactly what a certain vow means or what a certain precept means, it means we're making a mistake. These precepts must be open things, things which encourage us to view the world with openness and awareness. And another quote from that is that if you cling to the Kai, if you hold tightly to one of these precepts, then by holding it tightly, it breaks, is the image that's used. If you hold it too tightly, it shatters. So we must have a certain sense of openness in the same way we have openness of mind during Zazen. We need to encourage some openness of awareness with regard to any connection with what is right and what is wrong. But that does not mean that what is right and wrong is to be ignored. And there is an aspect of Zen teaching which is quite iconoclastic. It's quite rule-breaking. It's trying to be kind of provocative. And that aspect of Zen, which the Soto Zen teacher Suzuki Roshi, who was in California for many years, he captured. He said the essence of Zen is summarized in the three words, not always so. Nothing ever is always so, from a Zen point of view. And so this is, if you like, a more gentle form of this iconoclasm, the fact that there is no fixed rules, and sometimes a Zen master will deliberately break rules to make those around them question what those rules are about. However, having said that, the risk of that is that it can attract rebels who don't like rules. You can find Zen communities full of rebels who don't like rules. And that's something that you could see that as kind of certain amount of that in the kind of Beat Zen movement of the 1950s. A lot of good in the Beat Zen movement as well, but there was a certain amount of that in that movement. The worst aspects of that, one could say, is a manifestation of, if you like, adolescence, adolescent desire to shock and to rebel, which you can justify by saying we have no rules or we break rules in that. And that's something that one of our founders, one of our teacher here, Nancy Amfu, she was very much not into what she called Zen bums hanging around the place. She was very much not into kind of this sort of overly beat Zen aspect of coming into existence, that we need to have a certain discipline in our lives, and the rules can help us to find that discipline. So we must neither get too attached to the letter of ethics. On the other hand, one mustn't smash them. One mustn't break them ignorantly or with an adolescent mind. That's effectively the game that one plays through awareness. And again, from the Bonmo Kaigyo, it says that the rules, or rather the precepts, are the ultimate companion, and they help us overcome the difficulties that we experience as we walk the path of life. And so these rules are designed, rather than proscribing what we do and what we don't do, as shining lights on things that people tend to find challenging, and making us aware of those parts of our lives which are, in general, people find difficult. And saying, take care here. I remember another Zen teacher saying the rules are almost like a kind of sign on a frozen lake saying, danger, thin ice past this point. It's if you go past this point, things start getting difficult. And so you need to take extra care as you walk that way. So what they are primarily, if they're not something that tells you what to do and what not to do, what are they from a Zen point of view? And the key thing from a Zen point of view that they are is a call to awareness. They basically say that we must be aware of how we act and the consequences of our actions. We must be aware of the ways in which what we do and what we don't do can cause suffering in ourselves and in others. And that really is the essence of Zen ethics. It's be aware of the ways in which you act which cause suffering for yourself and for other people. That's effectively the heart of Zen, is be aware. Be aware is the heart of Zen. The heart of Zen compassion and ethics is be aware of the suffering that we cause accidentally or through ignorance in following those things that we think are in some sense going to make us feel happier, but actually they cause suffering both in the short term and maybe in the long term. And so always it's about being aware, as ever in Zen, be aware. And so it's to notice the different ways which the way that we think, the patterns of thought in our minds, how the ways that we think can cause us suffering, how thoughts that arise can complicate life, desires that arise, anger that arises, mistakes that arise, how they can complicate life, and noticing the way in which they arise can complicate life. And the way that we speak, how the way that we speak can complicate things, how we, if we say stuff which maybe is hurtful and the repercussions of that, if we say stuff which maybe is bending the truth, maybe to make ourselves look a little bit better than we actually are, whatever, the ways in which we bend, what makes us tend to bend the truth, notice the ways in which we bend the truth. And the actions that we do. What do we choose? Where do we choose to invest our time and effort? What do we do? And in what ways do those create suffering in ourselves and others? Noticing these things. And also notice when things maybe go better. Maybe things go better when one does something with a certain spirit of goodwill and that plays out well. So that's really the essence of what Zen ethics and Zen morality is. It's notice the mistakes that you make and that be aware of those patterns. And the Zazen is effectively a call to that. The thoughts that arise in our minds, one doesn't necessarily need to analyse, but one can notice the patterns, ambitions, dislikes, anger, whatever, these things arise during Zazen, and we can notice them in a way that's almost safe, in that we don't play them out around us. And so, without making a big effort, as Master Deshimaru would say, naturally, unconsciously, and automatically, this karma gets worn out through this process of just passing it by and a certain amount of awareness without analysis that happens. So part of Zazen practice is a natural expression of Zen ethics, because Zen ethics is to be aware, and to be aware of the ways in which suffering can ripple out from our mistakes. And then, so that is the overall spirit. What I'd like to speak also about is three of the precepts that we take. We take 16 precepts, and three of them, which are called the three pure precepts, which I'd like to talk a bit more about in that, because they really are a summary of everything. And they sum up as don't do bad, do good, and do good which helps others, is the summary of the pure precepts from a Mahayana Zen point of view. And so they're very simple. And I don't know if this is a Zen story from somewhere else, but I do remember a story about a wise old woman in a village who a young man went to see and said, what's the secret of a happy life? And she said, don't do bad, do good. And the young man said, well, you know, even a teenager knows that answer. And she said, that's true, but even an old woman has difficulty putting it into practice. And so, again, these are very simple, but nonetheless, they're a call to awareness, a call, an opportunity for us to notice the ways in which we make mistakes. So, don't do bad, which is effectively, don't act in a way which creates and perpetuates suffering, which our act of repentance. So there's only two ceremonies which go right back to the time of the Buddha, very early Buddhist tradition. We do various daily ceremonies here, but the ceremonies that go right back to the Buddha, there's two ceremonies, one of which is the ceremony of ordination, taking the precepts. And the second one is a ceremony of repentance, which actually we don't do here in a formal way. Those two ceremonies were part of the practice of the original Buddhist monks and nuns from the time of the Buddha. And repentance is to notice and accept and let go of the ways in which we make mistakes and have cause suffering, the ways in which we do bad. It's effectively to say, I acknowledge and I let go. And it can be done in a formal way through a ceremony, if there's something that's particularly, in the Buddhist tradition, I think it was every new moon, they would meet and do the ceremony, or maybe full moon, I can't remember which. But it would be once every lunar month, this would happen, and the nuns and monks would let go of the mistakes they'd made, acknowledge them and then let them go. But also in Zazen itself is an act of repentance. Zazen itself is an act of allowing one's mistakes to arise within our minds and then let them pass. And the interesting thing about Zazen, in my view, is that the mistakes arise, the knowledge of the mistakes arise at the time that is appropriate to them, and it can be many, many years after they happened. But they can arise, and one is vividly once more aware of something one has done, and then it's repented and it passes in Zazen. And it can be difficult. I remember I was speaking about this with my wife Ilsa, and she spoke about a man in our Sangha who she spoke about how when he first practiced, and he still practices with us. And she spoke about when he was first practicing, and we'd be on Sesshin, and we would be out and about, and he'd be like this. And whenever he was sitting, he would sit there for an hour and a half, crying constantly, just crying and crying and crying. And then he'd be out and about, and he'd be fine with us again, and he'd sit again, crying and crying and crying. And he'd lived a hard life, you know, he's someone who'd lived a difficult life, and probably got into many, many difficulties as a young man, some of which maybe were of his own doing, some of which were a consequence of those around him. Though in many ways it's difficult to distinguish which is which. But that really was, for him, Zazen was, an act of repentance, of letting go, and it made a big difference, you know, it made a big difference. And so that's something that is part of our practice, this repentance and letting go of the mistakes that we've made. So don't do bad, don't make mistakes, and let them go when they happen. The next is do good. Act in a way which moves towards awareness, awakening, and letting go of the ego. So from a Zen point of view, doing good is not simply trying to help others. It's also letting go of the ego in that act. It's better to do egoic good than egoic bad. But on the other hand, if one is doing good, it's good to let go. Let go of the thoughts that arise when one is doing it, whether it's thoughts of superiority or thoughts of humility or whatever comes up, let go, so that the act becomes simply an act, not decorated in any way by our ego. And so doing good, letting go of the self in that act of good. And finally, doing good for others. So one of the key things about the precepts is that they are about making life simpler for ourselves and those around us. And from a Buddhist point of view, we make life simpler to allow us to practice. We don't make life simpler for we aren't good necessarily for any other reason apart from to allow us and those around us to practice in harmony. And so doing good for others is when we practice, the practice is an offering not just for ourselves. It's an offering for all of humanity and all of existence. And so and this is where maybe there's some difference with modern mindfulness techniques, though I think there's a lot of value in those. Ultimately, our practice is an offering and an expression to all. Some good might come out of it for us personally. It might make us less screwed up, which is not a bad thing to be. But nonetheless, fundamentally, when we practice, it is an offering for all of humanity, all of existence, all beings. And one doesn't need to do that, you know, ooh, I'm really doing this for all the beings. You know, again, let go of that. But fundamentally, as we make our practice less complicated inside, it naturally and unconsciously and automatically is an offering for all beings and all of existence. And so that's what we do. That's what our practice is about. It's about effectively being aware and letting go of the ego. And fundamentally, at a fundamental level, Zen ethics, even though there are guidelines about what one should and what one shouldn't do, fundamentally, it's an act of letting go of the ego and allowing uncomplicatedness to naturally emerge in the world as a product of our practice. So, thank you for listening.
Shigu Segan Mo'o.